from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
The hosts are here. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Alon.
And my name's Ara.
And my name is Rich.
So, as always, week by week, we do this radio show here. You can check out our website, chatterboxgameshow.com. There's not much there, but it's how you get the show. You can also join in and chat with us in the live chat. Rich, are you on the live chat?
Yes, I am.
Rich is on the live chat. And if he's not, he will be very, very soon.
I am. I've been in live chat.
All right, fantastic. See, I need you to be there because I'm not there.
Yeah, I've noticed.
Manning the dials and whatnot. All right.
There's really no dials. But
well, there's a couple here.
It's more
somebody
keyboard
else
and typing.
We reserve the dials for when we want to tune up the graphics on stage 3.
I've learned that apparently I can totally shut your mic off, too.
Oh, cool.
Which comes in handy.
Wait, you have this power and I don't?
Yeah, well, I mean, you could come over here and slap a button.
Oh, all right. If you had the power, I would just never talk.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I like the little radio drama of me just basically asserting
him never talking, that, us not having to hear him. Well, there's benefits.
Yeah, you know what? It's starting to
all right,
sound good.
So last week I'm pretty sure we ran out of stuff to talk about.
I think Rich just turned his own mic off in disgust.
Also good.
I had to cough.
So we had several things last week and sort of ran out. Are we going to revive any of them or just move on to what's new this week?
Well, since my memory banks erase themselves every week, couldn't tell you what we had left over.
Okay.
But we got, actually, a bunch of cool news stories this week.
Fantastic. If anybody wants to call in with their own stuff to discuss, feel free. 866-536-1100. We'll be here, for the rest of the hour.
Or maybe we've said something in the past that really pissed you off.
That's doubtful, man. Everyone
or maybe
loves
not.
Us.
I always try to piss people off to egg them into calling in. But, you guys are a little too introverted. I don't know. Does that work?
Well, we understand our audience, right?
Yeah, I guess.
All right. Good.
Any more backhanded comments, maybe? I don't know. Anyway, let's get down to business here. So, actually, let's start off with a little quickie. So, did you know that there's an iPhone game where you can pee in the snow?
I do now.
Well, there
and
is.
I'm ready to go download it.
The urinal whatever, you got to move it around, like the drunk pissing game?
Yes.
Yeah.
And apparently,
What's this thing called?
What's this thing called? Snow Rider. See, quite an innocuous name.
Dude, I'm totally on that.
Snow Rider. This is fantastic. See, technology. We talk about a game, Alon downloads it.
Bam!
Right live on the air. Just
dude,
like that.
I won't tell you what I was able to do with my phone in my car because it would probably get me arrested.
That's good.
It's crazy.
But what will not get you arrested but will get you kicked off of the Apple iPhone store, apparently, is if you make a game where you're riding in the snow with pee, and the pee happens to be coming from a human.
Wait a minute. So it's not on the App Store anymore?
Well, here's what happened. Apparently, there's this kind of weird rule that, if interpreted carefully enough, basically means that, well, you can't have a human peeing in a game, but you can sure have a bear peeing.
Of course.
And so, apparently, the game is back on the store, and you can buy it. And instead of you looking down on the screen at a pair of human shoes, apparently now it's bare feet.
That's awesome.
For the record, it's two words, Snow Space Rider. If you search for it without the space, it will not work. And it's only 99 cents. Man, that is fantastic. I'm going to have to...
App get.
Yeah.
So, yes. So, never fear. Anytime there's some kind of obscenity rule in place, there will be someone there to find a loophole and circumvent it.
Not just a bear. Apparently, there's lizard and duck feet and spider legs.
You got to go with the duck feet.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is clear, though. I mean, a lot of there's this whole idea about defecation. And
yes,
and
people do it all
fluid.
The time.
Yeah. And expelling bodily fluids, right? The FCC has an issue with it. I'm not allowed to say certain words back to back.
Oh,
but
yes.
I can say them separate,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Because of the connotation
right.
Derived, at least while we're on the radio. Golgatron, you'll hear us say all sorts of stuff like that. So I guess that's because we like to be childish on Sundays. But that carries over to television as well. They have certain concerns about that, and then apparently into the App Store. And Microsoft had the same issue with their avatars, when we talked about that either last week or the week before, their avatars can't be used in a game expelling bodily fluids.
Right.
Except perhaps blood? I don't... Could they get hurt if they didn't bleed? Was that something they...
Oh, gosh, I don't even remember.
Blood is usually an exception.
Just as long as they marginally destroy other people.
I thought we didn't care about violence in America. Just sex.
That's why we allow the blood.
Yeah.
But not the other fluids.
We do, but interest groups with tons and tons of money and nothing to do with their time, they care.
I wonder if we could make a game called Blood Rider, in which you slit your wrists and then write words in snow. I don't know.
I think that could be...
That might not be appropriate.
I think that could be your potential foray into the games development.
It's so big.
There
Who
was
knows?
Like a day when an app when the App Store had an adult application on it.
And we could make an app that's just
Then someone made one and then they removed it.
No, they got clearance to post nudity, right? Because it was just a bunch of bikini shots, and then they got clearance to post nudity, but it totally killed the server that day, so they had to take it down because it was actually disrupting whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
But it wasn't the content,
which is quite baffling to me, because if you want the porn, you can get as much of the porn as you want for free. It's
using
not hard.
Using the very same phone.
It's not hard. And in fact, having the porn in game form is probably the lamest form of
it wasn't
the porn.
A game. I think it was just pictures.
And that's even lamer.
Yeah, I agree, man. There's all sorts of websites that just show you,
Anyway, personally, bears peeing is more offensive than humans to me, but,
All right.
What can I say?
Do spiders even pee?
That sounds like a question that should be on a 1 versus 100.
Spiders, I don't know.
Which actually, stuff. I finally played.
1 versus 100?
1 versus 100.
It's great, isn't it?
And the coolest thing about it, which I think is, there's just one little thing about it.
The dancing?
Not the dancing, no.
The trivia?
Which I think, and it's not the trivia, which I think is just incredible.
The inherently broken gameplay mechanic where if you know that A and B are not correct, you go right to C. Or in this case, it's X, Y, and A.
Actually, I don't think that breaks anything. I think that's fine.
Okay.
But the fact that after the question's answered, you get to see how many people got it wrong. And if you get it right, you get a score bonus that's a function of how many people got it wrong is absolutely incredible.
We discussed this in the past, and you didn't appreciate how good it was because you hadn't tried it.
Well, of course,
and I
but
said,
now
this
I've
is good
tried it.
Because it's a demonstration of the true difficulty of the question.
I think that's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. This could be perhaps a game for the new Ara segment of why this game is great.
This is true.
Something we're working on. It's all
something
secret
top
right
secret,
now.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I'm with you all the way. There's actually a few elements of that game that I enjoy.
The other thing that I find really cool, and this is one of the lame things about Xbox Live, right? It's really cool to see high scores and see where you're ranking the high scores, right? But there's so many people playing. There's so many people who have accounts that, for example, if you're in the top 30,000 of a popular game like Forza 2, that's actually a really good score.
That's funny. He said Forza 2 is a popular game.
It's a really good title. Oh, I don't know. They only shipped about 4 million or sold about 4 million copies.
Didn't they pack that in with a 360 at one point, though?
Look, I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to get into that discussion. Okay?
Right.
It is a popular game. Now, the thing about that is that, I mean, you can pick any other game, right? That's just the one that came out.
I know.
Out.
We're just messing with you.
That's right. So, 30,000, nobody wants to be 30,000th place.
But 30,001.
It's highly unsatisfying. In fact, you don't feel like you've really done anything unless they give you a sense of what percentile you're in.
No, that's why they give you the friends leaderboard so you can be the top 10 of your friends.
Well, there's that too, right? But then I think often the case is unless you've really you really maintain a long list of those, that's also kind of unsatisfying because I personally find that the people whose accounts I have, there's only one or two that actually have played the game that I'm playing, and so I have very little to compare my score with. Anyway, I don't understand why they don't just give you a percentile. I mean, even back in the Atari days, when they ranked you, they actually gave you a percentile sometimes instead of in the arcades because they had so many high scores on some of their games.
That's an interesting idea that I hadn't considered.
Because if you're in the 80th percentile, right, you're better than 80% of people's scores. Even though 30,000 people might be better than you, right? That makes you feel great about yourself.
Yeah, and I mean, they have a similar style. It's not as useful, I think, because it's not as defined. But just the concept of true skill, which is introduced in several games, right?
Yeah, yeah. But that's kind of wishy-washy. But anyway, because again, once again, right, you don't have a rank with true skill. You just have this number that's just like, okay, my true skill is 21. Okay, that's pretty good, I guess.
But you could call it a percentage, right?
But it's not really, because you don't have a sense of like where you are in that scale.
Yeah, that's only because
right.
they don't tell us where the true skill rank comes from.
Right, they don't. But the interesting thing with 100 versus 1 is that... 1 versus 100.
We know.
Is that they actually give you this information, albeit indirectly, right? You can see, while you're playing, how you're stacking up against the 8,000 other people playing at the same time.
There were only 8,000 when you're playing?
8,000 or 9,000
there were
is
like
the average.
120 once when I was playing live.
Okay, yeah. So that's
when we played, it was 100,000 playing at that point in time.
So I think this is like the future of high scores is who got the highest score in a certain space of time, like out of who's playing right now. Because even in, for example, like daily or monthly high scores on some of these games, the top scores are just so astronomical anyway, and there's a small community of people that plays the game so religiously that you can never actually hope to get into that high score unless you did something like give up the rest of your life.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, and that's one concern that I have. Or when I first came across 1 versus 100, I was afraid that they were going to reward only a certain percentile to be a part of the... We're the mob, right?
The mob.
Right.
So who's the 100? Is that the mob?
Or the one.
The 100 is the mob.
100 is the mob.
Yeah.
All right, so I was afraid they were going to reward being the mob as, you know, only for the people who play so much or do really well, because, like you said, there's a small percentage, which is actually a huge number of people,
right,
who just play more than anybody else.
Right.
Or manipulate the system to make it think that it's playing more.
Well, yeah, there's plenty of that, too. And then another really quick awesome tip, when the question comes up, you can figure out if A is the answer by if you hear everyone else press right after A comes up.
Oh, but you can only hear three people.
Well, yeah, but three, sometimes it's enough. When they get sports questions, I love that.
When we were playing, we were all a group, just like, it's A, quick. Anyway, we'll be right back.
And we're back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. If you want to give us a call, you can do that. It's 866-536-1100.
And if you don't want to give us a call, you could just do something else, like listen to our sponsorship stuff. Go to uat.edu. That's the website for the University of Advancing Technology. And they can teach you how to get into school. Well, they are the school. They'll teach you how to get into the industry, right, after having gone to school. what else do we have here? I see Xbox Live things.
Well, we got an Xbox Live story. We got a story about a dusty PlayStation 3. And apparently Eidos is messing once again with trying to manipulate the media.
They are pretty much the only company we hear about over and over, right?
Well, they've done it before, and apparently they're doing it again. Although, to be quite fair...
don't they deny it again?
Yes, they're outright denying it. So why don't we talk about that since we started already?
All right. Keep in mind, we have a caller, said it, but I don't know what he wants to talk about. So you want to...
All right. Well, let's do this, and then we'll take the call if our caller doesn't mind.
I want to hear what he has to say about this.
Me too. So here's what happened. There's a little game that Eidos made. It's called Batman Arkham Asylum. And there is, according to a source called Ram Raider, which is...
I automatically trust him.
Yes. So... You know, apparently the internet is more trustworthy than all other media sources, according to polls lately. So, apparently, allegedly, what Eidos said was, "Well, we have an embargo on this game." Now, this is a typical thing that they do in, in the media. They embargo game reviews, which means that if the embargo date is, let's say, Wednesday, you cannot release your review of the game until Wednesday. And usually the media outlets respect this because when they don't, guess what the publisher does?
Stops giving them the games.
That's right. And some of the more powerful media outlets are able to say, screw you, and get away with it because, you know, well, they're more powerful media outlets, but most of them, they usually just, you know, do whatever the publisher says, which is kind of unfortunate, but, you know, that's the pecking order.
Can't they also be fined if they break embargo?
Fined by whom?
Well, it's a legal thing.
Well, it's not when you don't sign any legal documents.
I'm saying, if they sign something, yeah.
If there's an NDA involved,
I guess people think of NDA, not embargo. But yeah, anyway.
Yes, I mean, obviously, if you've signed an agreement with somebody, that's another story.
Embargo is kind of like an NDA without the paperwork, right?
So mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway, so what they apparently said was that, hey, if you reviewed our game, and if you give us a score of at least 90%, and if you put our game on the cover, then you can break the embargo date. Sure, you can.
What's funny to me is, I can't think of anything that actually has a cover that I would be paying attention to, right? Like all of those review sites and things we go to are right. Sites.
Well, we're talking
really
about magazines here now.
That's what's weird, though, because how many magazines could this really apply to?
There Game Informer. Really, I think would be the only.
Well, there's Game Informer. Let's see
pretty
what
much.
Else is there. There's,
Game
I guess
Informer.
EGM is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's.
And Game Informer has already had a magazine featuring the new Batman game. On their magazine. So,
by the way, I was.
So maybe they already gave it a score of at least 90%.
Maybe they did.
I was not incredibly impressed with that game when I played it at E3. It was.
I've heard mixed things about it, but it looks
kind of cool, but I don't know. It was. I would need to see more of it. It's another one of those games where, like, you need more time with it to see if it's actually any good.
Yeah.
But it seemed a little bit simplistic to me.
So, So, you know, obviously it's kind of a rumor now. Nobody can actually verify if they actually did this, but considering the actions of Eidos in the past and based on a lot of things that I've seen personally in the video game media community.
You expect it to be true?
I, without knowing definitively one way or another about this, I would certainly not be surprised.
Well, I mean, we had a lot more evidence to back it up for the whole Kane and Lynch thing. That was Eidos, right?
Yes.
Yeah. When somebody got fired after giving them a bad review, like... That kind of hit the fan, right? And so it doesn't surprise me to see them doing it again. Like, it kind of does, because how dumb were they? They got caught last time, essentially.
Right.
It's pretty silly to try again. But then again, they have the same measurements that they have to hit, same metrics.
And I'll tell you this. Negotiating covers for magazines, I mean, I guess there's not that many magazines left. But
well, that I'm sure happens.
That was just commonplace for a lot of media outlets.
Yeah.
You know, you want a cover? How much money will you give us?
Fopo points out in the chat that like websites that have fixed width and they do the skinning and stuff like that, so that might be considered. Because like GameSpot, I mean, they make their whole website based around whatever game wants to pay them the most money. So.
Yeah, but nobody's gonna do a skinning without ad revenue.
Yeah.
Right. So on the other hand, you're always going to have a cover on your magazine.
Yeah.
And they have to pick something.
Or maybe not.
Yeah, a cover's a funny thing, because I think for websites, right, like even that I think is generally universally understood. Okay, like that's an advertisement.
Exactly.
Right? A cover seems kind of gray because, well, maybe it's become gray, but I don't think that it was ever intended to be advertising.
It wasn't.
It's for pretty people.
Right? And so it's almost like, well, you know, I'll just tell you this story real quick before we take the call. You know, when I used to work at a certain magazine, you know, a certain publisher paid that certain magazine a certain sum of money. And so if you look up the cover of this magazine, you can see there's a car on the front and there's a license plate that says CFS mm-hmm. and then a number like 87K or something like that.
Cover for sale.
Exactly.
Yeah. So was the artwork done in-house?
No, it wasn't. I think that basically at the time... The guy in charge of doing that basically asked the people who were doing the art for us to put those numbers in and was never really questioned about what those meant.
Oh, no.
So it was supposed to be an inside joke, which it is. And if you can figure out what magazine it was and what game it was, then kudos to you.
Sweet. All right. So we do have John from Vegas on the line, and he wants to talk about something near and dear to Rich's heart, I believe. This is what I think we're going to talk about.
Oh, really?
And also, quickly, on the subject of the Eidos thing, I think the point you're missing is that no one cares because reviews can be hyperinflated even without someone paying someone money. We all remember, like, Enter the Matrix getting, like, 8.7s and 9s, and that game was awful. And there's case and case all over video
game. I actually didn't think the game was totally awful.
I don't remember that game getting good reviews, and that was kind of fun. But I mean, it was glitchy, but that game was actually pretty fun to play.
You know what, John? Your point is well taken because, yeah, I don't know. There's
because
some
Ara remembers?
There's some group of people that continuously thinks that video game scores mean something, but it's not a lot of us. So I don't
hey,
know.
Hey, man, I still go to Metacritic on occasion to see if the game I'm thinking about getting is actually worth getting. I wouldn't trust
you
a
read
single
the reviews,
review.
You don't look at the score.
No, I actually go to the score, but I wouldn't trust a single reviewer's
score.
You
look at an aggregate score.
I would go to Metacritic where I can see, like, everybody thinks this sucks. That's why it's got a 45.
So instead of just paying off a couple outlets, they just have to pay off most of the outlets.
In order to succeed, yes, they'll have to pay everybody off, or at least a very large percentage, so as not to to allow the outliers to skew their score so much. All right, so Johnny.
Oh, I wanted to talk about how terrible, and I believe you covered this last week, or it was on the GolgoCast.
On the GolgoCast, in fact.
Yeah, Blizzard is not including LAN support with StarCraft II, and also they're saying Diablo III.
Dude, I know.
Probably the going to get them pirated more than any other decision they've ever made. I will make this prediction. You can reference this podcast later. This game will be as pirated, at least as pirated as Spore.
More than.
See, yeah. I actually think they'll just figure out that it's a dumb decision and change it before release.
Well, here's a great example. I have a friend who's going into the Navy about the time this game will presumably release.
All I can do is think about in the Navy. Yeah.
Guess who never gets to play StarCraft?
Right. He'll be working in a submarine. The only way that they can play that game is if they pirate it and make their own proxy Battle.net. The only way they can possibly play this game now is to pirate it. Where before they could have bought it legitimately, and they're in the military, so they have tons of discretionary income where that kind of thing doesn't matter.
Why does pirating make it possible to run your own proxy?
Well, I mean, I assume at some point.
You're hacking the code anyway.
Did you hear that, Blizzard? You're killing our troops.
I mean, you can
they're
play
just
the
trying
game.
To do their job.
I mean, he could just play the game single player. You know, he could just buy it three times for each of the single player campaigns and play by himself. But like, that's really lame.
I don't get it. Like, so your only complaint is that you need to have internet access in order to be playing these games with each other, right?
Right, exactly. Well, that and if you're at say like a LAN event where you've got one shared internet connection between, you know, a dozen to hundreds of people, you're gonna really expect, you know, 16 people or more to be connected to Battle.net through the same connection and not have any sort of lag.
Yeah, so that doesn't mean that you have to pirate the game, though. That just means you have to hack sort of the code, right? Or get some mod that someone posts.
Yeah, so if you're hacking the code somehow to have a proxy Battle.net, you're basically pirating the game, is what it comes down to.
I don't understand why that's the case.
You might as well be, because they're not going to be checking your CD keys on your proxy Battle.net.
Well, that's like saying if they don't have copy protection, then you're going to pirate it, when that's been proven to not be the case for everybody. I mean, certainly it allows a lot more piracy, but
LAN play doesn't allow for piracy. It's just they're taking LAN play out because they want to prevent it, which doesn't make sense.
Well, they have legitimate reasons, right, besides piracy. They want to be able to track your scores so you can't play shenanigans and go into a noob only game by just registering a new Battle.net account. They're trying to make it friendlier for players. But I think what they really need to do, I think you talked about on GolgoCast, they should say there should be an offline mode for the game where if you never go online with this game, you can play it.
Yeah, some extra downloadable thing for the hardcore people, I think, would be good. Saying this will allow LAN play, but maybe not for everybody. I don't know enough about these games to speak intelligently. But we're going to break. We'll be right back.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woo-hoo!
And we're back again. Now, we still have Johnny on the line. I wanted to bring him back because I talked to him over break for a minute, and he had another point to bring up based on something we talked about in a previous show or two regarding Fight Night. Johnny, there.
I am.
Fantastic. So lay it on me. More importantly, lay it on Ara and Rich, who didn't get to hear you and I talk.
Right. Well, the problem with pushing some of, and to backtrack, in case someone didn't hear the previous shows, in Fight Night Round 4, they're forcing you to use the analog controls for punching. They simulate some sort of motion that might have an analog to an actual move in the game. This was an optional control in Fight Night Round 3. I don't recall if it was the default or not, but you could turn it off and switch to a strictly digital kind of control with the regular face buttons on the controller.
Exactly, and Fight Night 4 has forced it upon people until downloading an update well after the game releases.
Until September.
Yeah.
Yes, and the reason I say this is terrible, well, it's nice to experiment with something. The point of a game, especially a competitive game, is not to fight with the interface, but to be able to perform your moves as precisely and exactly as possible. You're not trying to make, you know, the point of a dragon punch is not a point of being able to execute the move. It's just so you don't hit it by accident.
Well, I wouldn't say that it's just that, but I think that what you said before you got to that part was very well said.
Yeah, until that last bit you tried to squeeze in there, defacing the idea of a dragon punch. I see what you're saying. I understand, but I don't necessarily agree. And that's because the game experience is also important to the player. And it's also, beyond that, important that the developer pass that experience to the player. And there's a reward in terms of the enjoyment you get from a game or from doing anything, right? When you do it in a certain way versus some other way that isn't as good, right? So,
which can vary from person to person.
Certainly, right? But the developers, I feel, have decided that the gameplay experience is more enjoyable, and for whatever reason. If it means, you know, they're trying to reproduce a lifelike game experience, and that's what they're trying to get across.
Well, there's two things here. I think there's two separate issues. One of them is, like John said, there's a very large performance component, which is that the game is essentially you against this other person, and you're really anything you can do, right, to give you the most optimal experience in doing things in the game world, in game world terms, is valid, as long as it's not cheating.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, on the other hand,
so sort of,
here's the part that, I mean, the don't pick it apart. Okay, I know what you're going to get, but there's another part here, which this is what makes the situation kind of tricky. And that is what you were saying, Alon, which is that, well, the game experience, the developers have a desire, these mystical developers who created this game, and it doesn't have to be this game, it could be any other game, have a specific desire to impart a specific kind of experience or feeling of doing a certain kind of activity in a certain way. And the most consistent way that you can impart that experience is if you say, this is the way to control the game. Now, the tricky thing about this is that it just so happens that we have two control schemes that are wholly different, and yet both work, and yet both are certain people's preferred and optimal interface for playing the game.
It does put them in a tough spot.
It's kind of like using a joypad and a joystick. It's kind of like that difference. I'm actually more adept at fighting games with a joypad just because I've just trained on joypads way more than on arcade sticks. A lot of hardcore players, they're much better with joysticks. This situation is akin to saying you can only play this game with a joystick.
Yeah, I'm with you, but one of the analogies that John mentioned during the break was that unless it's a game that requires some sort of special movement, you know, you shouldn't have to fight with the controls. And the example he used was Dance Dance Revolution. And Dance Dance Revolution is just a digital dance pad, but you could also use a joypad and just press the buttons.
Right.
In fact, I have on many occasions, just out of boredom or because I didn't want to break out the dance pad, and I still enjoyed the game without the dance pad,
right,
or whatever.
This is a really interesting example.
Yeah. It's two totally different gameplay experiences. They're both optional. I mean, you can choose whichever one you want to do, at least when you're playing the home version.
You can, but the game is essentially destroyed if you use your fingers.
Exactly.
And
now,
the
truth is, it's actually not. I've enjoyed it
lots. Well, no, I mean, I'm not saying you can't enjoy it. I'm saying that the essential kind characteristic of gameplay is destroyed when you use your fingers, because you can manipulate your fingers in ways that you can't your feet. And so the limitations of how you can move your feet is actually part of the beauty of DDR.
I actually, not that I want to get too specific on the example of DDR, I think that you can actually do more with your feet than you can do with your hands. The timing changes, but it's more difficult to make some of the motions with the hand.
Well, I guess it depends on how you use your hand, first of all, right? I mean,
and if you have a broken wrist.
Well, if your hand's broken, that will cause you trouble, but you know, the obvious thing you can do, right, which completely destroys the game, is, okay, well, if you just hold one finger over each button, then you have this level of adeptness that you can't afford with your feet, obviously, because you don't have that many limbs. But this is funny, because as I'm thinking about these two situations, Fight Night...
They're pretty analogous, right?
And DDR, they are really, really close. And I would say that the essential experience of DDR is destroyed by using the alternate control method. But for Fight Night... It's, I don't know, I think that they're close enough that you can say, okay, you can use the one that allows you to perform better.
See, I really think that the two DDR control schemes are close enough as well. They're very close. And the difference here, like I still...
No, I completely disagree. If you had to play Fight Night with your feet...
Yeah, I mean, no.
Not between the two games. I'm saying that the two optional control methods in Fight Night... compare with each other in a similar way that the two optional control methods in DDR.
Well, in DDR, it's not like they programmed like, oh, we're going to have a controller method.
No, but they could very easily have said that you have to play with the dance pad instead of letting a controller work, right?
It's just that the dance pad is mapped to what buttons are on the controller.
Exactly, that's just a question of technology.
But with Fight Night, it's specifically a control method using the 360 controller, using control sticks rather than buttons. So it's different. It's not like the control stick motion is mapped to a button.
It's not going to get exact, but you have to understand the theory here. The idea is that the developers had an idea in mind. And clearly, when DDR first came out, I mean, I'm sure they considered this could come out on a PlayStation one day, right? But it was designed specifically for the arcade, and that was it. That it's going to be played with your feet. Obviously, they wanted you to play that game with your feet, right? Which was a control method versus this other control method that you could do. And some people might enjoy the other one. Like, I've enjoyed DDR with my hands before. They even made hand controllers that were shaped like a dance pad.
They did.
And then the developers of Fight Night have a control method in mind. That's the experience they want to impart. But you could do it the other way, and you might enjoy it. But the point is that the designers wanted you to do it a certain way and get that experience.
I suppose you could say that, you know, well... The people who made DDR, I mean, I obviously want you to use your feet, right? I suppose you could say that, okay, well, if...
The difference here is that the Fight Night developers came up with this partway through the lifetime of the series.
Well, there's that. Rather than at the beginning. There's that, and I just get this sinking feeling that with Fight Night, they don't want you to necessarily use the analog stick scheme because they think it's better or more... it allows you to perform better. I think that they just want to do it just because they find that it's a differentiating characteristic of their game, and they want to kind of basically force everybody to look at it in that way.
I honestly agree to an extent. I think that's part of it. But I know I've also read interviews where they claim, like I think when it was first introduced in Fight Night 3,
right,
they claim we've got this control scheme, and we think it's a lot better. And in the end, once you learn it, presents a better, I don't know if they use the word experience, or ends up making a better fighter or whatever.
That's
but
not true at all.
They made the argument.
No, if this were true, people would have practiced it and forced themselves to do it within the first week. It would be like any game where you have to force yourself to do something in a different way to perform better.
It is against human nature to push yourself to do something more difficult than another option you have presented to yourself.
No, I don't know. I could go kind of either way with that. But the thing that just gets me is that they want to manipulate me. That's what pisses me off. They want me to use the methods that they want me to use just by fiat, which is just insane.
Why?
It's their game.
It's their game. They're making
it's their game, but it's my game. I bought it.
Man, why do they make me use a controller anyways? I want to use my eyeballs to control a game.
See, what? Does every response you give have to descend into absurdity?
No, that's not that crazy.
I need the straw man.
What if they didn't design it with the buttons ever? What if that code just was never in the game and they designed it with analog controls? that's the way it was. Then they have to do extra work.
It's the same thing like with the Wii.
Right.
I think most games on the Wii have terrible controls.
The difference between the control schemes is so close. You can do all the things with one that you can do with another. It's you know what it is kind of like? Actually, a better example is the difference between steering with analog and digital.
Or steering with an analog joystick or controller versus a steering wheel.
No. That is not a good analogy. The better one is between
the anger in his eyes.
Because the steering wheel maps exactly to the motion that you do in the car. However, the analog stick is actually not an exact mapping at all, and not most of the time. And if you did, that would be kind of crazy anyway. And you know, obviously the digital, you have to do some, you know, there's some differences between both of those interface styles. And if any racing game told me I had to use one over the other and maybe use the one that I did not prefer to use, i.e. was not as adept at,
then you just don't buy that game.
Well, of course I don't buy that game. That's the point. The people aren't going to buy the game. But
so people should just not buy Fight Night Round 4 if they don't like it. Don't complain until they add it. If the developer, it really comes down to, I don't know if that control scheme is better or not. I haven't really used it. I played Fight Night Round 3 a little bit when I was in the dorms with my roommates, but like, if the developer decided that's what they're going to do, they should just decide to do that. And if you don't like it, don't buy the game. That's how you're going to...
Okay, well, I think that we've thoroughly beaten this dead horse into a mushy pulp.
Thanks for the call, John. We'll be right back.
And we're back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. And let's not talk about what we talked about before. Let's move forward.
The game that shall not be mentioned?
Yes.
Because what is that, like three episodes now we've mentioned it?
Voldemort?
Something like that. It's
yeah.
We're forward thinking. You know, we don't live in the past.
But
we live
in
the future.
I really, it's got a lot of people who don't agree.
No,
and that makes for good content. All right, fine. I'll just move on and remind everyone to visit uat.edu, the website for the University of Advancing Technology. I also want you to visit Golgatron.com, our sister site that's quickly developing into a master location for all internet users to go visit Golgatron and the Golgatron forums.
That's right. Even ones that don't know what video games or Golgatrons are.
Oh, completely. Because we've got like pictures of girls on there. We've got I'm pretty sure there's a naked picture or two of me. On the Golgatron website.
The most important picture of all being Cliffy B doing naughty things to a stuffed dinosaur.
Yeah, yeah. Also,
that's the best one.
Also that. And then, of course, articles that we write from time to time as well, you know, things like that.
All right, so speaking of articles.
Yes.
There's something that I want to talk about today, and I don't really know where we're going to go with this, but I find this topic intriguing and somewhat vexing, and maybe we'll explore it a little bit and... I don't know. Maybe we'll learn something. Maybe we'll figure out something.
As long as we can do it in 10 minutes, I'm happy.
That's right. So on Kotaku a few days ago, there was a editorial about the impact of homophobia in virtual communities. And basically it was written by this guy who I think he's the head of this organization called GLAAD, which is the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation.
Now, what's the title? The impact of homophobia in virtual? Is this the impact of homophobia that is expressed in virtual communities? Or
right.
The impact of homophobia outside of it and the impact it has in virtual communities?
Well, I don't know. That's getting pretty meta on me. So I don't know exactly what slice of that he's concerned with.
So there's this claim that there's a lot of homophobia on the internet, right? When you have voice chats and stuff. And I would argue that it's not real homophobia. It's just idiots who...
Well, that was my angle that I was going to take, right?
Okay.
I was... The most succinct explanation of this I actually heard a few weeks ago on one of my favorite radio shows, Wiretap, by the infamous Jonathan Goldstein. Okay. And so he explained, basically, in a nutshell, the thing where, okay, when he was growing up, right? And it might not have even been him. It probably was maybe one of his friends or something. Basically, the way that people ragged on each other was always just came down to, you're gay. No, you're gay. Yep. And no, you're gay. And then, just like over and over, right? And the term like gay, like, okay, you know, it's, I don't know. It's
joyful.
It's joyful. No, but that's not what I'm getting at. It's joyful. A term that people use a lot of times just to,
it's just
I don't know.
It's just a word.
Just to be, just to piss people off
sometimes.
You
know why though? Because another version of gay is queer, right? And queer really just means different.
Right.
And this whole gay thing, I'm guessing, became like a popular slam on someone just because it essentially means you're different. And being weird, you know, the same thing with being a nerd and a freak and all the different names that we have in junior high, right?
Right, right.
It's just a function of being different.
Right.
And so that's probably where just calling everyone gay came into play.
Now,
unfortunately, it also apparently is very not PC because people are actually gay.
Right. Now, you know, I don't personally encourage people to go around saying you're gay or anything like that. And, you know, I mean, I know people who call things gay all the time. And, you know, I don't necessarily, you know, espouse that. I mean, it's kind of just, it's kind of boring, frankly, if you use the same kind of dig on someone over and over, regardless of what the word.
Let me tell you, once you start hanging out with a friend or a girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever who claims to be gay or bisexual, I guess you would know if they're a girlfriend and gay, but like claims to have that in them and or just is really PC and doesn't want you using the word around, it leaves your vocabulary very quickly. It's frustrating actually, because I kind of enjoyed calling things gay and retarded. For a large portion of my life.
Well, like there's retarded.
I still like apparently, saying those things.
Apparently, retarded is very non-PC.
Apparently,
but only so much in the last few years.
But only so, and I guess apparently now you're not able to call people midgets without being highly offensive.
I still deal with midget all
there's,
the time.
There's a big news story out there. There's a big association of you know, short people.
Okay.
That was very, very offended, and he was even lobbying to make the word midget be, you know, I don't know, tantamount to some kind of, you know, slur, which I don't think it's quite that. I don't know how I would classify the word gay, but the point that I'm trying to get at is that when you go online, I don't think this is endemic to the world. Me and one of my friends, we were remarking about 4chan the other day and how, you know, 4chan is an anonymous internet board.
Yeah.
Right. And I find that to be very interesting. And he remarked that, well, it just shows you human nature. And I thought about that for a while. And I was like, well, I don't think it's human nature. I think it's, you know, even though it's an international board, I think it's largely a Western culture thing. And I think that this whole, you know, this whole calling people gay and basically, you know, ragging about their sexuality or referencing sexuality in that way online is kind of an adolescent Western thing. I don't think people do that in Japan, for example, online.
You know,
I don't have any special evidence to say that this is true, but I'm pretty confident that they don't do that in places
I'm
like Japan.
I'm suddenly developing this psychology theory in my head for why Westerners are more apt to call people gay, but I'm going to not talk about that on the radio because it's not so relevant to our show. But I can't wait to talk about it off the air. Tell me, though, what is the discussion in this article? Is this guy saying
here's the thing that I'm just kind of vexed about is that, you know, everybody knows that it's not nice to make fun of people, especially about something that they can't do anything about with. They can't do anything.
Unless you listen to the show that's on an hour before us on KFNX and believe in creation and homosexuality being a choice and all those things.
So there's one of the things that that this guy complains about in his article is basically how you can that the methods that all of these online providers have for actually basically stopping people from calling you gay, as it were, are inadequate.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
and,
of course.
The thing is, I think that it's intrinsically inadequate because even though, okay, like Xbox Online is a space that, you know, Microsoft is providing, right? It's like you're going to the YMCA, right? And, you know, or you're going to like a park and like you can't stop people from calling other people gay in the park, right?
Yeah.
So how are you going to stop them from doing it online?
Well, no, you're creating an environment, you know, a community where communication is the key component, right? And then you're asking them to be careful about how they communicate.
Right.
And that's not going to happen.
Now, here's the interesting thing. When I go online, I think when most people go online, they're mostly interested in just playing. And in fact, I don't even use a headset. Okay? But if you give the people the ability to communicate verbally with each other, guess what? There's going to be verbal abuse.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and some of that verbal abuse is going to fit into this category that we're talking about. And I don't think it necessarily is because people are homophobic or hate gays. It's just, I think the large part of it, I mean, I'm sure there are some, just as there are surely true racists out there. But most of the time, people who use racist verbiage are just doing it to piss other people off.
So I'm curious, though, is he saying that basically there's just too much homophobia online?
Well,
affects people negatively and makes them want to kill themselves?
He wants to take an initiative to actually somehow make the policies, I guess, more friendly to the...
He's actually concerned about the gay community.
Gay and lesbian community.
Oh, my God.
Which I think is an unreasonable demand, frankly.
And certainly.
Let me recite specifically what he says. For example, he complains about the lack of transparency once a user has been reported, leaving the harassed often feeling as if nothing has been done. Now, I've been harassed repeatedly online for all kinds of reasons. And
homosexuality?
I report users, and yeah. It doesn't have to do with homosexuality, but I report users, and I don't get any feedback about what has been done or what hasn't been done. But on the other hand, I also recognize that that would be an absolutely unreasonable thing to ask the people at Microsoft to do. I think that they should be spending their money on making their games better and not hiring bunches of people to keep constant correspondence with all the other people online that you've reported.
Well, devil's advocate here. There are other ways they could do it. Like if you just set up a visual stat counter for how many times someone was complained about, right? And then advertise that there's a limit at which some particular action takes place.
Yeah, maybe.
That would just encourage other abuses, though. Three friends would get on there and all like whine about their one other friend that they didn't like that day or something. Or did they just wanted to prank on, right? But certainly there are ways to provide that feedback automatically.
Right. Let me give one more quote. He says, while most companies do have some sort of policy in place that prohibits threats, advocating violence or death, and hate speech, there are major concerns with the effectiveness of those policies. Well, I would say, yes, there are, but you can't stop people from being insulting. You just can't. If somebody decides to be insulting and they have a means to communicate that, I don't think that you can stop them without actually prohibiting them from communicating. And on with online communities with this massive kind of scale, I mean, you know, if you don't want people to do that kind of stuff, I don't know. Have mics.
You know, I don't know if this is common, but one way to prevent that is usually having a pay gate, where if you want to be a part of this community, you have to offer up money, because then there's a real-life loss if you get booted out of the community and need to pay
again
to go
back. Yeah, that's true, but then, I mean, you pay for
the
Xbox
problem is
Live.
That, well, exactly. It doesn't work in the case of Xbox Live, because it's a low fee, and you don't get kicked out very easily for people complaining about you. But if you did get booted and you didn't get your money back and you had to buy again,
right,
that would have a real-life response.
Right. And the final word I have to say about all this is that, you know, this is... You know, insulting people, hate speech, whatever, like, that's what it is. This is really the issue. And I don't think that just because it's lesbian or gay, it should get special treatment.
I agree with you there. It should just be limited now.
Well,
maybe she missed it.
We had another thing, but we didn't get around to it, so we're going to talk about MMA.
Well, maybe she missed it.
We had another thing, but we didn't get around to it, so we're going to talk about MMA
I didn't
next
get
time.
Good thing it's like 10 at night. We'll be back next week, folks. Thanks for listening.
All right, good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.